Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode number 99 of the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. Hope you all had a fantastic week. Hope you enjoyed the divisional weekend, which was an interesting one. We've got some intriguing games to talk about. There's nothing crazy, I would say, like the week prior, where we had, you know, the Browns-Steelers game, which was bizarre. Derrick Henry getting held to like 30 yards. The Heinicke experience. Seattle getting upset. You know, the close game between the Bills and the Colts. Games, I would argue, not as good that weekend. But however, we've noticed, and we being me and perhaps you in the audience, if you've been around or if you've been watching football for a few years, it feels like Wild Card Weekend kind of has the best games of the playoffs. Look, sometimes we get a great couple of games in the divisional, but usually we got at least one or two that are two-score games. Look at Bucks-Saints, wasn't a great game. Bills-Ravens was pretty good, not phenomenal. Rams-Packers, I don't know. You tell me. Comment section, if there is one, where you're listening to this, or on social media, at Nick Donatic, anywhere and everywhere. N-I-K-D-O-N-A-D-I-C, as usual. But that being said, sometimes we get two good championship games. You know, so championship weekend, I'm looking forward to it. We'll talk about those games. We'll break them down in the pick 'em portion of this week's episode. But as usual, we're going to get started with the standout seven. Now, the deeper we get into the postseason, it's hard to get to seven without kind of fragmenting things. So it might be, you know, six, and then seven will be some news and notes I gathered throughout the week that I wanted to touch on, maybe discuss a little bit with y'all. Let's get started the way we always do, chronologically through the games. Number one, Rams-Packers. The bottom line is, with Aaron Donald hurt, and I would make the argument even with him healthy, the Rams just weren't good enough for this game. All things considered, the Rams' offense was not awful. It was decent, I would say. Jared Goff, 21-27, 174, and a touch. Cam Akers goes for 90. He looked pretty good. Going in the next year, it seems like he might be their lead back, and let's see where it goes. Without Cooper Kupp, especially, as we said, the news broke right at the tail end of the episode last week as we were in the pick'em portion. It just made an easy read, you know. Josh Reynolds was all right. Robert Woods tried to give you what he could. I mean, Van Jefferson, one of his better games of the year, I would argue. Higbee didn't give you much. On the defensive side of it, I mean, did they touch Aaron Rodgers the entire game? No sacks, maybe a couple hurries. I don't know, that's off the cuff, but definitely no sacks, no turnovers. And you take a look at the Green Bay offense, and it was a smooth running machine, as we've seen and as we've expected. You know, 23 of 36, 296, two touches for Rodgers. The running game was dynamic. 14 of 99 for Aaron Jones, 12 carries for 65 for Jamal Williams, 27 yards pitched in from the third back, A.J. Dillon. It was perfect. Perfectly run, perfect game planning, realistically, especially with Donald out and, as we said, Cooper Kupp out on the other side. The Packers' defense did enough, you know. A sack for Za'Darius Smith, sack and a half for Rashawn Gary and Kenny Clark each. You know, it is what it is. I mean, Devontae Adams didn't even have the biggest game ever. 9 catches for 66. Tanyan pitched in 4. Like, they're just the better team. That's the point. They're just the better team. And as I said, just to sum it up here, and you know, last week's episode we ran over an hour, and you'd think, how can you run that long with less games? Well, these games are so important. There's so many things we could break down. And the same goes for this week, but not so much for this game. I mean, the point-blank thing is Green Bay looked solid on defense, and they looked dynamic on offense, led by the presumptive MVP. Now, whether you want to have that conversation, the MVP usually doesn't win the Super Bowl. Okay, but the fact of the matter is, right now, that is the best team in the NFL. What we're looking at, this current version of the Green Bay Packers, is pretty darn good. That's it. And that's going to take us to the second game. We're going to jump over to the American Football Conference for number two in the standout seven, and it's Ravens-Bills. Ravens-Bills was, it was a funny game. So this game was 3-3 at halftime, and Justin Tucker doinking two kicks and looking like a deer in the headlights. I mean, Lamar Jackson, not great in the first half. He ends the game 14 to 24, a buck 62 and a pick. I mean, on the ground, he only pitched in 34 yards. You know, this Bills team, and we keep hearing it from every prognosticator you've ever heard, they're undersized, but they're fast. And that athleticism came in, especially when you talk about certain players that are just freak athletes that they have, like Tremaine Edmonds. Tremaine Edmonds ends this game with 9 total tackles, and he is flying sideline to sideline. He's a good tackler. Matt Milano, pretty darn good. Not a freak athlete, but good in coverage. Micah Hyde's a good athlete. We saw the athleticism of Tre'Davious White and obviously Teron Johnson with the big pick six. I mean, if you would have told me the Bills would only score 10 points on their offense, then, well, 11 if you count the extra point, then I would not have bought in. I would have assumed they'd give up more than that. But we saw early in the first half, you know, Josh Allen misses a big touchdown. There was a lot of questions about the wind in this one. The thing that intrigued me was the zero designed runs until second quarter for Buffalo. My question is why? And I couldn't come up with anything in my head. I mean, it doesn't really make sense, especially having an offensive coordinator that is so respected, Brian Daboll, who's been, you know, interviewed. He was named the Football Writers of America Assistant Coach of the Year just 2 days ago, right? And he's getting interviews for head coaching positions and things like that, and I'm genuinely befuddled. And it's one of those things that, you know, if I'm looking for a head coach, I probably don't want the guy that refused to run the ball for a quarter. Now, did it cost them? No. They wind up 3-3 in the first half. But look, it's not like they're the Seattle Seahawks from last year where their running game is so decimated. You know, Devin Singletary's still a pretty good back for my money. I mean, you compare him to the backs on the other side. I'd rather have Devin Singletary than, I mean, Mark Ingram, who obviously is no longer with the Ravens organization, which we'll touch on later. I mean, I don't get it. Would you rather have Gus Edwards? I don't know. I'd probably take Singletary. I mean, I'd rather have Dobbins, obviously, but I don't know. It was very bizarre to not run the ball at all, especially when coming out of halftime, we saw them drive immediately, bing, bang, boom, and they started running. Was it a bait thing? I don't get it. I understand styles make fights, and if you want to take the boxing analogy or MMA analogy with the McGregor-Poirier fight being tonight, maybe we'll pick that one. We'll see how that goes. But if you want to take that analogy, it's the equivalent of a fighter just not throwing their left for 2 rounds or not going for a balanced, versatile mixed martial artist, not going for any takedowns, just exclusively fighting on their feet for the first 2 rounds just to see what they can do. And then you go into the third round and you're like, okay, well, assuming it's a championship fight, 5 rounds in the MMA kind of thing, UFC thing, I should say. Okay, I've got 3 rounds. Now let's actually start running scheme. And then they start running the ball out of offense. Their offense was great. They go down and they score. And it was, you know, it was what it was. And you wind up in a situation where it's 10-3. The last big hurrah is the drive by Baltimore that ends in a pick six by Teron Johnson. Phenomenal play. Look, we've had this conversation before. We had this conversation last week with Ben Roethlisberger. We've had this conversation before with Cam Newton, talking about the Super Bowl thing. I think Lamar could have caught him. I mean, we talk ad nauseum about, oh, Lamar Jackson, he's one of the most versatile elite athletes in the NFL. Right? The whole thing about, oh, he's a running back. You know what I mean? He's so fast. And Teron Johnson, he's a pretty fast guy in and of his own. And here we are, chasing him up the sideline, playoff game, and I feel like he kind of let himself get blocked. You know, it is what it is. It's kind of hilarious. Buffalo's defense was fantastic in this game, I would say. And they forced a lot of bad throws from Lamar. He did not look good. And it's kind of funny. And then we talk about the last play that he plays, which is not funny, obviously, and he goes into the concussion protocol. Another bad snap, second bad snap of the game. First one he found a way to get out of, this one not so much. And he falls hard on the ground. He grounds the ball from what looked like the end zone, but they gave him the 1-yard line, because playoff game. and it's awful. The thing that got me is late in the game, fourth down play, last hurrah, they have Tyler Huntley in, not Robert Griffin III, interestingly enough. I don't know what happened to Robert Griffin. Perhaps I missed something. But I tend to think Bob Griffin might have been a little bit more confident going into this, or a little less shaky, I should say, because Huntley straight up missed a touchdown on that fourth down play. Overthrew Hollywood Brown, I believe it was, and the Bills took over in plus territory. You know, Tyler Bass misses another field goal, two missed field goals on each end. It must have been real windy out there. And Baltimore just kind of goes out without a whimper. You know, it's just kind of over. And this is the second year in a row that we've had a really good Baltimore Ravens team. And when it comes to the playoffs, it just didn't happen. It didn't. And we talk about the first one. We talk about the first playoff game, and they got a big win. They did. They beat the Titans. Last year, I didn't buy in on the Titans. I thought they were kind of over in their, how do I put it? In over their head, rather. Excuse me. In over their head in terms of the depth that they were facing in the pool. They're not a kiddie pool team, you know. They're not a pretender, but they were in the deep end when they wound up in that championship game, and, you know, it is what it is, right? And they were a great team, and this year, when it came, push came to shove against the Ravens, I think the coaching staff didn't really think it would go the way it would go. They thought there was no chance they'd be stopped up front. And, of course, you know, they wound up losing that game 20-13, and Lamar Jackson had one of the best plays of his career. It's reminiscent of, if you remember, the Robert Griffin run up the sideline against the Minnesota Vikings, any random Michael Vick scramble you want to put in there, Steve Young scramble, you know, perhaps maybe the Alex Smith QB power up the sideline once upon a time when Jim Harbaugh was still there in San Francisco. Great quarterback runs, there's plenty of them, and that's definitely one of them. Putting him over 100 rushing yards in the game and all that. And that's why it's all the more impressive that in this game, the Buffalo Bills held Lamar Jackson to 34 rushing yards. 34. You take a look, I mean, Marquise Brown gives you 87 receiving yards. That's probably more than you expected. I mean, Mark Andrews, the guy that everyone loves, and the guy that obviously I was not in on, and then I had to eat my words a little bit. Now here, I'm doubling down. I mean, four catches for 28 yards, you know? The fact of the matter is, and as we've discussed, the Baltimore Ravens passing game is not built to play from behind. Their offense as a whole is not built to play from behind. And realistically, I guess you could argue nobody is, but a team like a Kansas City can sustain. They can survive being down two scores. A team like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a team like, well, pretty much any team that's playing this weekend can survive playing from behind. But when you're a run-dominant team, and your receiving core is simply not good enough, you can't. You can't get behind, and you can't get in a situation where you have to throw the ball. You take a look, they were averaging 4.2 yards per carry, end of the game totals, from each Edwards and Dobbins. That's not bad. You run the ball three times, that's a first down. However, you wind up in a spot where you're down 17-3. You wind up in a spot where all of a sudden Lamar is hurt. You can't really run it because they're going to sell out to stop that run. I'd say this, Tyler Huntley did his best. He didn't look awful. He didn't look like a starting caliber quarterback. He looked like a young QB who needs development and things like that, obviously. But the athleticism was there. You could see why he would warrant maybe a roster spot. But I don't know. What happened to Bob Griffin? I have to do a little bit of research on that one. Good old Bob. Yeah, and I'm going to say the same thing going into next season, to be completely honest. I said it when Lamar was coming out, I believe, I remember I wanted him to go late one to the New York Giants. I thought that would have been a great pick. Obviously, he goes, or top two, late one. He goes late one to Baltimore. Perfect pick. Of course, they hit it because they're the Ravens' well-run organization. They need to help him out with the receiving core because he's not an elite passer. That's the fact of the matter, and no one would argue that he is, I don't think. I hope not. He's still got a little bit of the lollipop throws now and again that we saw even when he was at Louisville. So, and that's not the end of the world. We see sometimes Russell Wilson's got the perfect lollipop that drops over the corner, you know, over the shoulder, I should say. Over the corner and the shoulder, realistically. But he's also got the arm strength to zip it in there when he needs to. He's got a little bit more of a pocket presence. We saw Lamar look kind of jittery in this one. And they got quite a few sacks, I believe, in this one. One for Levi Wallace, two for Jerry Hughes, one for Mario Addison. Four sacks on the fastest quarterback. Granted, I believe one of those was on Huntley, at least. But for two relatively athletic or fairly athletic QBs. That's kind of impressive for teams that defense hasn't really gotten much praise. It's all been about their offense, right? It's all been about Josh Allen and the boys. Well, Stephon Diggs played great. Josh Allen played all right. They ran the ball 16 times for about 32 yards. You know what I mean? And I'm assuming that includes negatives from the QB kneels, so call it 35 yards even. It's nothing significant. And we saw Josh Allen was their leading rusher against the Colts. Josh Allen ran the ball 7 times for under 10 yards. That was just not part of their game. And you know what? I'll give them that. In terms of versatility, Brian Daboll really went for something here. But at the end of the day, it's too weird for me. And I think if they try to pull something like that against the Kansas City Chiefs, that it's going to come back to bite them. To be completely honest, it's going to come back to bite them. It's just the way that it is. You know, you take a look, the game plan against the Colts, we're going to run Josh a lot. And we see late in that game, Josh thinks he's still kind of in runner mode, and he's trying to break out of a sack, and he fumbles the ball, and he could have fumbled away the season. And then in this one, you score 3 points in the first half, because in the first quarter, you're so predictable. And you know that it's a pass coming every time. You just know. And, you know, he's not scrambling, and that's not a bad thing necessarily, but you're doing that against a team with pretty good corners and a decent front seven. I would say a pretty good front four. So it's kind of odd, you know, how much can you bash a guy that won the game? So I'm not here to rip Brian Daboll and the Bills game planning, but moving forward into this Kansas City game, it's definitely going to impact the way we're going to pick this game. Either way, we're going to get right in. That's the end of that. We don't need to waste any more time ripping the Ravens and such. Let's get right into number 3 in the standout 7, Cleveland Browns at Kansas City. You know, let me just say this. I picked, when they first acquired Odell Beckham, the Cleveland Browns to be a playoff team. And we saw them Cleveland it up so rapidly. It quickly became, it's a meme, it's a thing, right? It's like, aha, of course Cleveland's going to find a way to lose, right? That's just what they do. You know what I mean? And it extends throughout sports. It's the Cavaliers. It's this team. It's even the Indians getting bullied a little bit in the playoffs by the New York Yankees. And it's a situation where you almost feel a little bad, you know? I mean, every city deserves a winner eventually. You know, this Cleveland Browns fan base is loyal, and they've been sitting on their L's for quite some time here. So they go out and they have the best season they've had in quite some time, and I think this team is pretty darn good. And I think this team is going to be pretty darn good next year. I really do. I think they'll contend for this division next year as well. The thing that's concerning, and not really concerning, but I wonder, this team was better without Odell Beckham. I'll be completely honest with you. This team was better when they didn't get tricked into throwing the ball. So I wonder if Kevin Stefanski can avoid the bait of thinking, all right, well, Baker Mayfield had as we take a look at the statistics real quick, probably the best year of his career, definitely in terms of wins and losses. You take a look, I mean, 26 touchdowns to 8 picks, certainly the best year of his career. Not the most touchdowns, not the most yards he's ever had, but the interceptions went from 14 to 21 to 8, tremendously cut that rate. Sacks down from 40 last year to 26, highest QBR he's ever had at 72.1, which is Pro Bowl level, borderline MVP candidate level, I believe. And the completion percentage at 62.8%, up from last year, still below his rookie season, which is intriguing, but neither here nor there. The interesting thing to me, like I said, is don't fall into the bait of, all right, we're going to be a passing offense next year, or we're going to lean a little bit more on the passing game, because this team is plenty good enough with Kareem Hunt, and especially with Nick Chubb, to run the ball and kind of dominate the pace of play and force teams to play their kind of football. Granted, you run into a situation where, are you going to become a Baltimore Ravens, right? But I think, this is just a thought, obviously offseason still withstanding, this team with Baker Mayfield and his ability to throw the ball is arguably more able to play from behind than even the Ravens. You know, would I rather have Lamar Jackson or Baker Mayfield at quarterback? I'm obligated, because he was an MVP, to say Lamar Jackson, right? But with the way Baker showed his ability to manage games, simply manage games, and then in this game against the Chiefs, kind of almost forge a comeback on a big stage, not to mention what we saw him do in college and things like that, it's a big decision for me. You know, if my offense is bereft of talent, then I need Lamar Jackson to be everything. if I have a good running back and decent receivers, I might be obligated to take Baker Mayfield and wind up in a situation like this. It's an interesting one. Maybe we'll talk about it a little bit more in the offseason. That's not what we're here to talk about. The fact of the matter is the final score doesn't tell the story. Because it's 22-17, and right before halftime, we have the play of the game. You know, my boy Rashard Higgins, who in his time in Cleveland has had the most rapport with Baker Mayfield, more than Jarvis Landry, more than David Njoku, more than Austin Hooper, who's now there, more than Odell Beckham. It's Higgins. Higgins and him being Baker Mayfield, look like they're on the same page quite frequently. And Higgins is diving for the end zone right before halftime, gets hit helmet to helmet, fumbles out the side of the end zone. It's a touchback. And I don't know. I mean, I'm obligated to give you some takes from other players. You know, Devin McCourty, every guy who's played for Belichick started screaming at the TV, don't reach for it. Interesting take. Joe Mixon, first rule coach tells us, don't be selfish and reach for the end zone. Interesting. Derek Carr, well, obviously that's the worst rule in football. Should that be a rule? I don't know. Gene Steratore, I've been a firm advocate of making helmet contact reviewable. It's a player safety issue and extremely difficult to officiate consistently in real time. I agree with that wholeheartedly, by the way. Ruling correctly on plays involving helmet contact actually benefits from the slower speed of replay. I agree wholeheartedly. We've seen a lot of helmet-to-helmet hits that don't get called and a lot of helmet-to-shoulder or shoulder-to-helmet hits that have been called, you know, shoulder-to-shoulder even, that gets called. Interesting. You know? Very interesting one. I don't know. It's a very weird game to me. And obviously, football is a weird game, right? But it was kind of bizarre, because when you saw them driving down the field, you're thinking, all right, they're in it. They're genuinely in it. And then Higgins fumbles, goes out of bounds. You wind up in a situation where it's 19-3 at halftime. Bizarre score, I know. With Harrison Butker, if you look at the final score, kind of keeping the Browns in it. Missed extra point, missed field goal. It's a 5-point game, would have been a 9-point game. 9-point game, obviously, two scores. In the second half, just obviously keeping through it chronologically, we have the other big story that we have to talk about out of this game, and that is Patrick Mahomes suffering a, quote, concussion. Because in this game, we see Mahomes go for a little... We saw him go for the speed option and score early, right? So we see a similar play where he's just running for a short yardage down, and he kind of gets wrapped around the neck and yanked. And it looked... Look, I'm going to be completely honest. Thought it... This is first thought, not 2020 hindsight. I wouldn't throw off a penalty flag, but it looked a little dirty the way he was getting ripped down by his neck. That's kind of not... Kind of not good for player safety, kind of not good for the way that things are officiated nowadays, especially with him being a quarterback, especially with him being things like that. Oh, he was a runner. Yeah, but you wouldn't want to see anyone get yanked down by their neck. Okay. I don't know. I think they couldn't stop the Chiefs with Mahomes back there. I mean, he goes down way early in this one, in the second half, 21-30, 255 and a touch. And 14 yards on the ground with the touchdown. So he's responsible for two touchdowns. Team's up 19-3 at half. He was kind of just doing whatever he wanted. Then Chad Henne comes in. Henne goes 6-for-8, 66 yards. A horrible interception. Horrible. He just kind of just yeeted it out there. Threw it up in the end zone. And Tyreek will catch it. No. What are you doing? I don't know, but then at the end of the game, when it comes down to it, Chad Henne with the gutsy scramble runs for, I believe it was 14 out of the 15 yards they needed, just short. Looked like he was maybe inches short, might have been able to get it if I'm being completely honest with you. And then they go with the easy, looked like the Peyton Manning play. They always talked about, you know, Peyton rolls out to his right, a little out route, you know what I mean? We've seen over and over and over and over and over and over. Easy cheesy first down play. To Tyreek Hill, and they win the game. I don't know. We talk about, before that drive, Cleveland punted the football to Kansas City, knowing damn well they're down 5 points in a divisional playoff game, playing with house money, granted against a backup QB, but against a team that in terms of skill position talent, even without Sammy Watkins, and they didn't have him, is just dominant. Tyreek Hill, one of the best wide receivers slash deep threat slash whatever you want to call it in football. He's an X factor. Travis Kelce might be the best tight end in football. Definitely in the conversation. Certainly top three. Kittle didn't really play as much this year. Tend to give the nod this year to Kelce, probably. Might have to pore over some stats. Maybe Darren Waller get him in there. I don't know. Either way, Mecole Hardman, who's a pretty athletic weapon for them. Daryl Williams, who in this game played pretty well. You know, I forgot Daryl Williams was even on the roster. It's one of those things where I thought Le'Veon Bell would be the go-to guy. People were talking about Le'Veon Bell. Look, guys, Le'Veon Bell's still in and Ben is out. Look at that. Isn't that great? Le'Veon Bell, 2 carries for 6 yards. Oh, Le'Veon Bell's really an impact player. Yeah, maybe not. Either, I don't know if he hasn't learned the playbook or Andy Reid's just not. Andy Reid was giving the ball more to LeSean McCoy last year. An injured LeSean McCoy. I don't know. It's weird to me, but okay. Whatever. I mean, whatever. Either way. Back to the crux of the issue is obviously the main thing we have to talk about moving forward from this one is Mahomes goes down with the quote-unquote concussion, and then after the fact they say it wasn't a concussion, and that it was a nerve injury sustained by the jerking of his neck. Now, this is believable to me. Some people will probably call shenanigans and say they just want him to play, and of course he wants to play, and they're not doing what's safest for the player. I don't know. I'm not in the room. I couldn't tell you. Is the nerve damage more significant long-term than a concussion? It's possible. If he gets hit like that again, what happens? I don't know, but I'll tell you this. They certainly thought he had a concussion, and I can't blame them. Diagnosing from the replay booth, or the play-by-play booth, I should say, was Jim Nantz. We're on it right away. Granted, he's not a doctor, but I guess, you know, do your thing. He was wobbly immediately. He couldn't keep his feet. There's no way they could have let him back in that game. They just couldn't. He's going to play this week. That's just the way it is. So that's going to impact our picks, and obviously we'll talk about the pick 'em portion later. It's a little concerning, you know, if you're a Kansas City Chiefs fan, seeing your franchise, guy that got a $400 million contract, wobbly and unstable on the field as he approaches one of the bigger games of his career, top five big games of his career. Interesting. Trying to repeat for the first time in forever, in terms of an NFL champion, first time in literally forever for the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't know. The Cleveland Browns played a great game. Granted, this score would not be as close if Patrick Mahomes didn't get hurt. This is a Madden football game, and injuries are not on. I don't think they wind up getting this one within 10. If I'm being completely honest, maybe within, you know, maybe they get it kind of close. I don't know. But 5-point game, this game was not as close as the score dictates. And that's why I was talking about good games and such. Don't think this game was as good as the score indicates, especially because the giant cloud over it was the former MVP, current Super Bowl MVP reigning, going down. That brings us to number 4 in the standout 7, and you know we had to talk about it because we called it. You don't win 3 times against the same team. It just doesn't happen. That's why we picked the Ravens before. That's why the title of the last episode predicted this. And here we are, Nostradamus, hit it right on the head. We go 3-for-4 last weekend, and the big one, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers taking down the New Orleans Saints. So, Deontay Harris, at the beginning of this game, looked more dynamic than I've ever probably seen him in a single game. He was all over the place. He was going crazy. Touchdown called back on the return. Explosive first return. And he gets hurt. And at that point, I'm thinking, okay, well, the thing that could have really jolted this Saints team was special teams. You know, force Tampa, yeah, well, we got to have to punt it out of bounds, or we got to worry about punt coverage. Maybe we'll go for it in a weird situation because we don't want to punt to Deontay Harris. Oh, we'll kick it through the end zone by accident. I don't know. He gets hurt. And what could have been a Saints lead early is called back because of a penalty. Drew Brees obviously not great in this game, but we'll run it through the way we took the notes down. First half, Tampa's up. Tampa's just kind of playing better than them. And I'm going to be this guy. I don't think Tom Brady played phenomenal either. You know, he didn't throw three picks, and one of them, I believe, was tipped, and the other was the weird Jared Cook one at the end, where I don't know what the heck happened. But Drew Brees did not play well, and neither did Tom Brady. Tom Brady, 18-33 for a $199 is not a good game for Tom Brady. Look, and I know it's not all stats. I'm not saying Tom Brady played poorly when I don't say it was a good game, because I've said that a lot, and I wonder if some of you might think that. No, not by any stretch of the imagination. But what I'm saying is Tom Brady didn't even have to go full Tom Brady to win this game. They win this game 30-20. He throws for 199 yards. They leaned on this running game heavily. 30 carries for a $125 between Leonard Fournette and Rojo. And this is one of the things that kind of made me a fan of them. Not a fan, because I'm not rooting. But in terms of their championship contender status, kind of lifted them up my list. Because the ability to just kind of grind teams down with also Tom Brady being that dude with a receiving core that included Godwin and included Antonio Brown and Mike Evans and all those guys. By the way, Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, Rob Gronkowski combined for 3 catches, 27 yards and a touchdown. Mike Evans, 1 catch, 3 yards, touchdown. 1 catch. Interesting. It was all the running game this game. You know, and I don't know. 20-13 is the score late in the game. And the New Orleans Saints are driving. And Jared Cook fumbles away any amount of momentum they had. And all of a sudden, just like that, the season is going to be over. It's 20-13. They're going. And what a mistake from a veteran. Jared Cook's a good player. Never been great, not a Hall of Fame guy, but he's a good veteran player. And let's also talk about the elephant in the room. How weird is this offense without Taysom Hill? The biggest shot play, obviously, is the Jameis Winston trick play touchdown, shenanigans, and it's the longest pass of the season for the Saints. I get it. Drew Brees doesn't have the arm. Yeah, we've been hearing it all year. I get it. Yada, yada, yada. But the fact of the matter is, without Taysom Hill to make these things spicy, so to speak, they wind up in a situation where they're kind of a handful of years behind what they were normally running. Jameis doesn't have the athleticism to run those things. Add that to the fact that they didn't have a backup plan. There was 2 snaps of some wildcat shenanigans? What can you really do? They didn't have a backup plan, which is kind of surprising to me. Because Sean Payton seems to be, and he's been getting praise forever, a pretty darn good coach. It just wasn't there. Tampa Bay was super physical with their wide receivers, and we saw some complaints coming out of this one, I should say, even during the game. And one of the important things to note out of this one is, Michael Thomas reportedly said he played through multiple injuries in this game. He's going to have multiple surgeries to repair damage to his ankle. He wanted to try and make this run for Drew Brees, right? And, oh, by the way, people have been ripping Drew Brees. Drew Brees is washed. Yeah. Drew Brees reportedly played this season with, obviously, we know the 11 broken ribs. We know about potential lung damage. Apparently, it was a collapsed lung. Apparently, there was a torn fascia in his foot. By the way, there's another one. A torn rotator cuff. Now, if this doesn't scream end-of-career Peyton Manning to you, then you weren't paying attention. Because the fact of the matter is, this is almost exactly what happened to Peyton at the end. Remember, people were ripping him. Why are they putting Peyton out there? Bench him. Get Osweiler in there. Look at the arm on Osweiler. He can throw the ball over them there mountains. And it's just, the fact of the matter is, the team was carried by their defense, and they had just enough on the offensive end to win. And this team's defense isn't bad. They got put in a rough spot in this game because of the interceptions and the fumble. It's just too many turnovers. And there's just too much to account for. You're facing a Tampa Bay team with a Hall of Fame quarterback, a former Pro Bowler at running back, who's splitting carries with a guy who might be a better back than him right now. 2 former Pro Bowl wide receivers. I think Godwin might have made it. Might be 3. Rob Gronkowski, one of the greatest tight ends of all time. Look, these guys are not necessarily in their prime. Gronkowski, certainly. Antonio Brown, certainly. Brady, obviously. But Godwin's entering it. Mike Evans is in it. Granted, he's beat up a little bit this year, but he's in it. Rojo has been better this year than he's probably ever been before. Maybe he was pretty darn good last year, but Rojo's been good. Leonard Fournette, not the Pro Bowl form, but there's still flashes there. This team is too good for the defense to have done it the whole game. You add in, as I said, the Jared Cook fumble, I think, was huge. Huge in terms of sucking the air out of it. Not to mention, and I have to say it again, with no crowd, it's or a very limited crowd, it's very easy for me to see one of these teams getting upset, especially if they lean on that home field advantage as much as a team like New Orleans would. You know, home field advantage means a lot to them in the Superdome. Mercedes-Benz Superdome. It's just the way it is. So if you don't have that, like Seattle didn't have their crowd to kind of fill in the gaps, then I don't know. It's just not good. I mean, we saw in this one, it could have been an even bigger blowout. We saw Brady miss a couple of shots to Gronk. The big takeaway from this one, I'm being honest, Tampa Bay's running game was fantastic. Brady almost throws a pick at the tail end of the first half. That would have been huge. Of course, they drop it. Neither one of these teams look better than Green Bay. It's true. Neither one of these teams look better than Green Bay. And obviously, we'll get into that as we talk about the pick'em portion and things like that. So the big takeaway, and we'll talk about Drew Brees, you know, Drew Brees. We'll get into that in its own category, right? But this Saints team just wasn't good enough to win this game. And it's a shame because it might be the last hurrah for Drew Brees. Like I said, we'll talk about it in a sec. But New Orleans, just not good enough. And it's hard to beat a team three times in a row and all that, blah, blah, blah. It's true. It's just the way it is. So that'll take us to number five, and obviously I just mentioned it. Let's talk about some QBs, yeah? So we have three potential QB retirements here. So the first one we're going to talk about is the one that we know, right? Philip Rivers is going to retire from the NFL. He talked about at the end of the year that he wasn't really looking to do so, but it was interesting to me that he just completely flip-flopped on that. I don't know. Don't know what came into it. We have a statement, obviously, that we caught along the way that we can read every year. January 20th is a special and emotional day. It is St. Sebastian's Feast Day, the day I played in the AFC Championship game without an ACL, and now the day that after 17 seasons, I'm announcing my retirement from the National Football League. Thank you, God, for allowing me to live out my childhood dream of playing quarterback in the NFL. Grateful to the Chargers for 16 seasons and the Colts for the 17th. Thank you to all my coaches who helped me grow as a player in person. Thank you to the support staff. I appreciate the opposing defenses making it challenging physically and mentally every week, and I enjoyed the banter. King of the banter, we know that. I appreciate the referees for putting up with my fussing. I think I was right most of the time. Dadgummit. Thanks to the fans in San Diego and around the nation that both cheered and booed. Special thanks to my teammates. Without a doubt, my favorite part of the game, being a teammate. Thank you for being mine. Lastly, thank you to my wife and best friend Tiffany and our children, Haley, Caroline, Grace, Gunner, Sarah, Peter, Rebecca, Claire, and Anna. Oh my goodness, he has so many kids. Could not have done it without y'all's unwavering support. As my playing career comes to an end, the next chapter begins. Nunc copi, which is Latin for now I begin, or is it probably nunc copi? Phil Rivers got that one via Adam Schefter. So Phil Rivers calls it a career as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, arguably. Now, is anyone, and I mean anyone, and this is not going to sound a little mean, is anyone going to make the argument he's a top 10 quarterback all time? Because I don't know. I don't think you can, just literally, because you take a look at just the list of guys that might still be around that are better than him. Aaron Rodgers gets to be above Phil. He's won a title, he's won multiple MVPs, he's above Phil Rivers, he's just more talented. And there were times where he had less around him and, you know, than Phil Rivers had. Phil Rivers had a Hall of Fame tight end, Hall of Fame running back. You know, not to mention some Hall of Famers passed through on that defense and some all pros in terms of Antonio Cromartie and the like. Okay, so that puts us Aaron Rodgers certainly above. Drew Brees, who we'll get into, definitely above. Tom Brady, definitely above. Peyton Manning, definitely above. Dan Marino, probably above. I think Marino, look, I wasn't around to see him, but from everything I've seen statistically and in terms of highlights and the way that people build him up, Dan Marino is one of the most talented people to ever play the quarterback position. He's got to be above Phil, especially because there's no tie break. He doesn't have a ring either, so you lose. Joe Montana, obviously going to be above. John Elway, likely also above. So we're looking at seven, right? Okay, who else are we getting in there? Let's take a think through the years. Take a look. Take a gander at some of the people who might be above. So that's seven. Johnny Unitas, I don't know. Maybe Steve Young, maybe Otto Graham. How far back are you going? I wouldn't go Troy Aikman. I mean, do you put him above a guy like a Kurt Warner? Do you put him above historically right now? Project forward. Do you think Russell Wilson's going to end his career a better quarterback? He might. I mean, do you put him above? I don't know. Do you put him above, and the big debate comes in, and you knew I was going to bring this up. You just knew. Do you put him above Eli Manning? First of all, fun fact that I saw here, and I don't know, I don't know. I wonder if this is the only time a Hall of Famer has been traded for a Hall of Famer on draft day. Crazy how literally nothing bad happened via that trade. We got our guy who gave us two titles, and the Chargers got the best quarterback, or one of the best quarterbacks they've ever had in team history. I don't know. I'd have to do the Dan Fouts pour over and statistics thing like that. Either way, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting to me. You'd have to pour over the statistics, and that's what we're going to do in this moment. Career record, 117-117 for Eli Manning. 134-106 for Philip Rivers, 366 to 244 touchdowns to picks for Manning, 421 to 209 for Rivers. Rivers ends with 6,000 more passing yards, obviously played in a handful more games, you know, what is it, 234 to 240, but more efficient. Two Super Bowl wins is the huge one, and two Super Bowl MVPs for Elijah Nelson Manning. I don't know. The fact of the matter is, I think throughout his career, Philip Rivers almost consistently was on better teams than Eli Manning was. And for the longest time, these Charger teams, don't let gild the lily, these Charger teams underachieved. They really did. You know, they genuinely underachieved. They were the team that would take a nap for halfway through the season. Remember, that's why they made moves on the coaching staff. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of weird to me, because I feel like he'll probably get into the Hall of Fame, but should he? I don't know. I think he did enough statistically to get in, but was he ever a top five quarterback in the league? I don't know if he was. I genuinely don't know. I mean, did he have any first-team All-Pros? No, but that's because he played in the conference with Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. So that's probably going to monopolize that for the bulk of your career. You know, I mean, Brady's still in his conference until this year. And now Patrick Mahomes is around, by the way. So, I mean, 4,000 yards almost every year, you could pencil him in. Not crazy with the interceptions, although we saw 20 interceptions last year kind of cost them. 21 in 2016 kind of fell off. A lot of years that are meh, you know. But if you can knock a guy like Eli Manning for being, oh, well, all he did was two lucky runs. Well, he had more runs than Phil Rivers. Phil Rivers didn't even have those. So, I don't know. I tend to think Elijah Nelson Manning, who is 8th all-time in passing yards. Phil Rivers obviously retires at number 5, which he's going to get passed probably next year, but if he sticks around, by Ben Roethlisberger, who we'll discuss in a minute, or in 2 years by Matt Ryan, maybe 3. Aaron Rodgers definitely going to catch him eventually if he sticks around. Matt Stafford sitting at 45,000, not too far back himself. So, I don't know. And we didn't even talk about Favre, by the way, in the greatest quarterback conversation, which is kind of rude, but we probably should have thrown him in there. Yeah. Either way, I tend to think Rivers will get in by way of, oh, it was bad luck, and he tried his best dadgummit, and everyone liked him. He won't be first ballot, neither will Elijah Nelson Manning. But I guess he did enough. I don't know. A lot of people use the term Hall of Very Good, and I think that might apply in this situation. However, it's nitpicky. It always is. But, if guys like John Lynch aren't in, I think John Lynch was really darn good in his career. So there's a lot of guys that had to wait to get in. I think he might have to wait a little bit. I tend to think Eli Manning will get in. Obviously, he's got a year jump on him, having retired after the end of last season. But I tend to think he will get in less time on the ballot than Philip Rivers will, just by way of memorable career. Phil Rivers is one of those guys that in 20 years, people will look at the stats and be like, who's this Philip Rivers guy? Well, he never did this, he never did that, he never did the third. I mean, take a look at a lot of these higher passer rankings, and there's guys that you didn't think would be. Carson Palmer is pretty high up on some of these, and Carson Palmer, he had a semi-memorable career because of what he did in terms of a late career renaissance with the Cardinals, and he's in the Ring of Honor for them. And forcing his way out of Cincinnati is the most memorable thing he did to me. But he never won a big game either. He didn't even get close to the show. You know what I mean? What, make one NFC championship game? They were getting bullied out of the playoffs in Cincinnati? Like, all right. I mean, Phil Rivers, he won some playoff games, but what did it amount to? And you talk about the bad luck, and we mentioned, he mentioned it in the post, playing in the ACL. The AFC championship game without an ACL because of the injury and things like that. And, like, sorry, dude, what do you want me to tell you? I mean, best ability is availability. One of the best abilities is durability, and you just got bad luck. It's a tissue injury and things like that. But I don't know. I tend to think he'll get in. I do. It also puts a primer on last week's episode. If you haven't seen it or listened to it, I recommend you go through and page through and find it. We talked about the Colts quarterback kind of approach, considering they might not have a QB. And, well, we know now that they do not have a QB moving forward. So let's go. Take a look at that. We, ran it down, all the possibilities. Next in this one, let's talk about Drew Brees. Drew Brees, if he retires right now, is almost certainly a top 10 quarterback of all time. Well, he is certainly a top 10 quarterback of all time. Quite possibly a top 5 quarterback of all time. And we realistically probably should set a time frame eventually for, they have the live ball era for baseball, and then they have the after the mound was raised. We need to start putting a bracket together, so to speak, in the timings of the NFL, where now towards somewhere in the middle of the Brady era, when the Brady Patriots were dominating, they started putting an emphasis on offense that just simply, from what I've heard, from what I've studied and things I've seen in the statistics, that just wasn't there in the Montana days. What certainly wasn't there in the Unitas Bart Starr days. So these statistics are kind of incomparable. Joe Montana, could he throw the ball? Could he throw for 5,000 yards in the modern offense? Probably, but he never had that opportunity because that's just not the way football was played back then. Montana, you look at his career, he ends with 273 touchdowns. It's almost modest. You take a look, career high in terms of passing yards, he never broke 4,000. And now, I believe Eli Manning had a 5,000-yard season or just under it at 4,900. Like, it happens. They're airing the ball out like never before. We need to kind of contextualize these statistics as we move forward. Because Drew Brees, obviously, statistically, is one of the top 5 quarterbacks ever. But he played in a very passing-dominated era. He played in a very friendly-to-him system. I'm not calling him a system quarterback like some people implied Brady was. But I'm not implying that at all. But Sean Payton was a great coach, And he was always able, especially in, there were times in New Orleans, you go through the stages, right? When they had Jimmy Graham and guys like Devery Henderson and Reggie Bush. And towards the more Michael Thomas-centric time there, it's short passing and Alvin Kamara and swing passes and things like that. And now you get into the late ends of his career, last 2-3 years maybe, probably 2 years, with the Taysom Hill trickeration that they sprinkle in to help the offense. You know, it's a plain salad, but you put some vinegar and some funky dressing and all of a sudden it tastes different than it did before. That's why when you took Taysom Hill out, when you took the vinaigrette out, I'm just looking at a bowl of lettuce. And that bowl of lettuce couldn't beat Tampa Bay. If Drew does decide to give it a call it a career, which the implication is he will, he had a great career. He's got nothing to be ashamed of. He bounced back from the early career shoulder injury. Could have been a Dolphin. Lord knows what could have been if he was there. But he goes to New Orleans and has an all-time great career. Probably the best player in Saints history, I would argue. Probably. Almost certainly. Or the Aints, as they once were. Brings them a title, helps everything rebound from Katrina and things like that. Great guy in the community. He did all that he could. You know, if he wants to give it one more hurrah, so Mike Thomas is healthy when they do it, so he's healthy when they do it, you could make the argument it's a good idea. However, he looked like he was done. Walking off that field, he looked like he was done. Who knows if that changes, and it might, but he looked like mentally he was ready to call it at the end of that game. The other one who we discussed last week, and we'll bring it back up once more, it's got to be, you know, Ben Roethlisberger. Is Ben willing to call it a career? Is he going to come back out there? You know, he looked pretty sad at the end of the game, like he was kind of towards the end of it, but he's the one, I guess you could argue, is easiest to see coming back because his durability is usually... I mean, it's been breaking down. He's had some bumps along the road, but he's usually a guy that could take a hit and bounce back. 33 touchdowns to 10 picks this season. Certainly not a bad year. The team was 11-0 at one point. Was it a Fugazi 11-0? Probably. But it is what it is. You know, this team is good enough with Ben Roethlisberger to contend in that division. If he calls it a career. We see them bringing in Dwayne Haskins this week. I don't think he's ready to be a starter next year by any means. And we saw them promote Matt Canada, the quarterback coach, to OC, probably trying to keep Ben around. Could they be in the market, and this goes to New Orleans too, for a guy like Matthew Stafford? Could the value be going through the roof for a guy like Matt Ryan? Atlanta picking high in the first round could move on. You know, could Matt Ryan on the Pittsburgh Steelers be a title contender? Yeah. He could do everything Ben Roethlisberger could do with his arm. Could Matt Ryan on the... They wouldn't trade him to the Saints. But could Matthew Stafford on the New Orleans Saints open up a new virtue in terms of deep passes that they haven't had in a couple of years? Probably. They could have a better offense next year than this year. You know? Would they be interested in it, or would they go with Jameis? I mean, personally, Matt Stafford over Jameis every time, but obviously he's older. You've already worked with Jameis. Maybe you've made some promises or some guarantees to him. People were speculating that that Drew Brees at the end of the game pointing to Jameis and talking to him in his face was him saying, "This is your team now, you gotta go, blah, blah, blah. I don't know, or you're good enough." I don't know. We'll never know, per se, what was said. There was no mic there, I believe. At least I didn't hear the audio. Maybe there was, but I didn't hear it. Either way. I don't know. I can see Ben coming back, but I can also see him not coming back. So we'll see how that one plays out. Number six in the standout seven. You know we had to bring it up. The head coach hirings. We're just going to run through some updates. Detroit hiring Campbell away from New Orleans. I believe it was Dan Campbell, yeah? Yep. Hired away from the New Orleans staff. Big motivator kind of guy. All right. Good for them, I guess. Guy you'd never heard of. Usually that happens. The Chargers hire away the Rams D coordinator, which Brandon Staley, 1 year in, and they're presumably this is the next Sean McVay kind of guy. They keep poaching coaches off of his staff because everyone respects him so much. He was the young guy that no one expected, and he was a great coach. And now, maybe he's breeding the next generation. He was recruiting Staley forever. He gets him for a year. The team bounces back to the playoffs. They look better than ever. You know, potentially pushing towards next year, trying to push Seattle even harder, and he loses his DC immediately. Bad luck. Sarah Thomas going to be on the Super Bowl referee crew. This is not a coaching thing, but it's in the notes. Congratulations to her. She's going to be the first ever female official in the Super Bowl. Good for her. By all accounts, I've heard nothing bad about her, so she's got to be a decent enough ref, you know? It's not a situation like if you're a baseball fan, you know, like an Angel Hernandez, where it's, oh, kind of infamous. No, she's been fine. She's been adequate, and she's been doing her job, and good for her. Good job breaking through. Back on the coaching front, Raheem Morris gets poached from interim position in Atlanta all the way to Los Angeles. He's going to be a member of the Rams staff. Good for him. I thought he was a pretty good coach for Atlanta. I think he should be in the running next year, maybe the year after, depending on how the Rams do, to be a head coach again, you know, because that Falcons team played hard for him, and that Falcons team was almost good enough. I think next year, if they keep Matty Ice, which they probably will, I would say, depending on how things shake out in the offseason, that I think that they could be ready to be good again. They could be a fringe playoff contender, depending on how the offseason goes in terms of draft and free agent signing. They could be back in it. Additionally, Philadelphia Eagles get their big hire, a guy that you've probably never heard of in Nick Sirianni. He was working under Frank Reich in Indy, so they can't get Frank Reich back because they let him go. And people credited, from what I've heard from Eagles fans, a lot of the innovation on the offense to Frank Reich, and now he's an Indian doing his thing. Doug is gone, obviously, so they go to Sirianni, which is the closest thing they can get. Let's see how it goes for the Philadelphia Eagles. Matt Patricia goes back to the Patriots staff, unclear what role he's going to fill. Josh McCown got an interview for the Houston head coaching job. This has to be a keep Deshaun Watson around thing. Maybe they're close. I doubt it, but sure. I mean, if you got to do what you got to do to keep your all-pro quarterback around, I guess, but I don't know. Speaking of that, there's also a report that supposedly he prefers the Jets. He wants to go to the Jets now. He changed his mind because they hired Robert Saleh, and he doesn't want to go to the Dolphins, or his second choice. And like, all right, well, that decision is yours to make, whatever. Neither here nor there. But that'll bring us to the end. Oh, hold on. We've got a little bit more in here. Almost took us to the end. Final news and notes. After we talk about where's Bob Griffin? He got waived by the Baltimore Ravens post the game. And he also, Mark Ingram, released by the Baltimore Ravens, saved them $5 million. He's got plenty to offer in 2021, according to Adam Schefter. That's what he said. I think Mark Ingram's over the hill. I think he could do the Frank Gore thing and contribute as a veteran back that can give you some decent carries, but I don't think Mark Ingram is anything special, and I think they realize that. That's why they're going with J.K. Dobbins and Gus Bus and things like that. It just makes sense to me right now. Additionally, A.J. Brown reportedly had surgery on both knees at the end of the season. He played on two bum knees. Said he was done for the year in week two, played all year, made the Pro Bowl. That is insanity. My goodness gracious, that is insanity. I don't even know. I have no words for that. A.J. Brown, that is a complete and utter baller move. I don't know. Just another fun fact for you while we're here. Both conference championships are a rematch from week six of this season. Obviously, week six, we had, I believe, Kansas City winning, and we had Tampa Bay winning. So let's see if the rematches carry out or if we get some revenge going on from both teams here. Very interesting. Very, very interesting to me. And that'll bring us to the end of the Standout 7 and get us into everyone's favorite part of the show, my favorite part of the show, the pick'em portion of this week's episode, of episode number 99, as we go into Championship Weekend. Let's get started with Buccaneers at Packers. Injury reports for this one. So the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to be without wide receiver Antonio Brown, hurt his knee last week. Questionable also is a big one. Rookie of the Year candidate on the defensive side. Safety Antoine Winfield with an ankle is questionable. Packers going to be without defensive lineman Kingsley Kiki with a concussion. And questionable, one of their better defensive backs, corner Kevin King with a back. Now, let's talk about week six, right? We got to mention it. We talked about it before. 38-10 drubbing. Going into this game, Green Bay 4-0, Tampa Bay 3-2. 3-2. Tampa Bay did not look great beginning of the year. They lose to the Saints, and then they mix in there a weird loss to the Bears where it looked like Brady didn't even know how many downs there were. They beat the Chargers by a touchdown due to a, you know, kind of rally from the Rook in Justin Herbert. Rodgers goes 16 of 35. 160 yards, 2 picks. Aaron Jones, 10 carries for 15 yards. On the other end, we see Brady go for 166, 2 touchdowns, 17 of 27. This is another one I'd say it's not a good game for Brady, but it didn't need to be. Rojo, Ronald Jones II, 23 carries, 113, 2 touchdowns on the ground. Gronkowski, one of his more prolific games this season in terms of catches, 5 catches for 78. Mike Evans only pitches in 10 yards in this one. We didn't even see Antonio Brown on the field, and we won't in this one either. This is a rough game for me because you talk about the revenge aspect and things like that, and the fact of the matter is, from last week's games and throughout the season, the Green Bay Packers look like the best team in the NFC. At one point, it was Seattle. At other points, it was I believe it was just Seattle. And then they handed it off after they started floundering to the Green Bay Packers, who have been dominant, who have been consistent. And I have no reason to think, realistically, other than just picking against my, you know, what I've seen, that the Green Bay Packers should lose this game. This game is at home. There are, I believe, some fans in attendance, which should help. Tom Brady has never played in this kind of environment, a playoff Green Bay Packer game. Granted, Tom Brady's played in every kind of game you've seen, right? Foxborough and Green Bay are comparable-ish, but he's at home in that one. He's never been the bad guy in a spot like this. He's been in Denver, right? We saw cold weather championship game. He lost that game to a shell of himself, Peyton Manning. I don't think... It's hard to pick against Tom Brady. You really, really got to fight the notion in your brain that he's just going to find a way to win because he always does. I'm taking Green Bay to go to the Super Bowl and follow through on what I picked at the beginning of the postseason. I'm picking Green Bay. Best team in the NFC comes out of the NFC. Give me the one seed to win at home. I could see it happening, like I said, but... give me Green Bay. Their running game looked fantastic last week. Better than I've ever seen, arguably, in a big game like that. And then mix in, you know, the receiving threats of Davante Adams and things like that, and Robert Tonyan, and guys that are kind of B-tier dudes, but when you mix them in all together, goes pretty well. Goes pretty well. Next, that's a 305 kick, by the way. That one going to be, I believe, on Fox. Joe Buck game, as usual. 640 CBS. The Buffalo Bills head to Kansas City to take on the defending champion Chiefs. The Chiefs will have Patty Mahomes, as we said. The Bills, none listed as out. Two is questionable. D-tackle Vernon Butler with a quad. Wide receiver Gabriel Davis with an ankle, who looked pretty good last week, by the way. The Chiefs without linebacker William Gay with an ankle. Some big ones on the questionable list. The reports are that Bashaud Breeland, one of their better corners, will play in this game. He's cleared concussion protocol. They did not have him for part of last week's game. Both running backs, Clyde Edwards-Helaire with an ankle and a hip, and Le'Veon Bell with a knee, are listed as questionable. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was close last week but did not go. I'm going to make the assumption Championship Sunday he'll be able to go. Wide receiver Sammy Watkins didn't go last week with a calf. I'm going to make the assumption he'll try to go. And corner Rashad Fenton, questionable as well, with a foot. Assume he would try to go. Biggest game of the year to this point. You lose this game, you go home. Although last week you can make the same argument. However, the Bills a little bit better in my purview than the Cleveland Browns. Now, I said that I picked the Packers because I look like the best team, but even though part of me just, I couldn't help but fight it and think the Bucs would find a way, and I feel the same way about this game. I'm a little iffy on Patrick Mahomes with the nerve injury and things like that. If I'm to believe that it's truly just a nerve injury, then there shouldn't be residual problems, theoretically, this week, I'd assume. I mean, if he takes a hit in a weird spot, Maybe. But it's not a concussion thing. There's no headaches coming from it, I believe, from what I've understood. So he should be not full strength, but good enough to go. We take a look back at the Week 6 matchup. Patty Mahomes, 21-26, 225, 2 touches. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 26 carries for a 161. Tyreek Hill only had 3 catches for 20 yards, and they won that game 26-17 in Buffalo. Josh Allen, one of his worst games of the year, 14 of 27, only 122 yards, 2 touchdowns and a pick. Stephon Diggs, just 46 yards in this one. Cole Beasley, just 45. The running game was all right, but it wasn't great. They wind up with 23 carries for 82 yards. This Buffalo team looks different than last year significantly. This Buffalo team looks damn good. But if the champs are playing like the champs, if the champs are really, you know, rearing for a repeat, which I am to believe they are, I have no reason not to, and if Patrick Mahomes is going to go, along with, like I said, potentially Clyde Edwards-Helaire being back, Sammy Watkins being back, I'm obligated to take the champs. To be the champ, you got to beat the champ, and I don't think the Buffalo Bills, as presently constituted, have enough talent to beat the champ. I don't. I really... Look, part of me thinks this Buffalo team, they found a way to beat Baltimore. They found a way to beat Indy. When you argue, you know, Indy was playing pretty darn good. Potentially, they could find a way in this one. But I can't do it. I can't take Buffalo in this game. I got to take the champs and the former MVP to hold it down. That'll bring us to the end of the pick 'em portion of this week's episode. And that'll also bring us to the end of episode number 99 of the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. How does that feel, folks? Who'd have thought 99 episodes? 99. Wow. Next week's going to be a big milestone for us. We'll talk all pro. We'll talk Pro Bowl shenanigans and rip the Pro Bowl as we always do during the Pro Bowl week. Especially this year, it's going to be boring. We'll talk Hall of Fame, potentially. We'll give out our awards, yearly awards special. It's going to be a great show. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you all for sticking around for so long. And if you're new, thank you for joining us. It's towards the tail end of the year. We only got a couple episodes before we go off-season schedule, but thank you for tuning in either way. I've been your host, Nicholas Donatic, signing off.